You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Escalating U.S.-China tensions are threatening soybean demand just as farm finances are stretched. After Beijing tightened rare earth export controls on Friday, President Trump scrapped a planned meeting with President Xi and threatened an additional 100% tariff move that clouds near-term export prospects. The American Soybean Association's Caleb Ragland said farmers had hoped talks would reopen their single biggest market. Instead, uncertainty rising while China keeps diversifying purchases towards other regions. Analysts note Beijing is leveraging rare earth dominance and that a looming Supreme Court case on presidential tariff powers could reshape Washington's toolbox, adding a fresh policy wild card. Markets absorbing conflicting signals, however, Chinese exports and imports outside the U.S. remain resilient, suggesting any U.S. shortfall can be partly backfilled elsewhere. Leaves U.S. soybeans to compete harder on price, freight, and reliability. Well, Dr. Carl Zuloff of Ohio State University analyzed net storage returns since 1973. He finds cash storage that runs past June usually a loser as prices tend to fade into late summer. So storing corn and soybeans will only pay if it clears cost, and history says that's rare. For storage ending by June, average returns for both cash and futures hedged strategies really don't differ from zero. Means that they typically just cover interest in commercial storage fees. Even so, on-farm bins can still pencil a bit faster. Lower field loss, more flexible delivery basis choice, that's all part of it. Soybeans have shown somewhat better cash returns than corn, consistent with faster demand growth, while hedged storage's clear advantage is lower risk, especially beyond January. Seasonals, though, still matter. Prices often build from harvest into late spring, but the edge commonly disappears after June, and most years don't reward one more month bets. Well, pricing signals only work when they reflect what packers can actually sell. Yet today's yield grade was built for 1960s cattle, not the heavier, trimmer animals our modern genetics produce. Dr. Jessica Lancaster says the industry's red meat yield roundtable is tackling that gap so producers are accurately paid for true sellable yield. Current USDA yield grade equation often explains less than half of the real variation in red meat yield, which means premiums and discounts can miss the mark. New tools can fix it. 3D imaging shown it can account for over 90% of sellable yield. CT scans measure carcass composition with near-lab accuracy, and even radar shows promise for predicting yield in live cattle. Finally, 30-year fixed rates ticked down to 6.3% from 6.34 one week ago and down from 6.32 a year ago. 15-year rates at 5.53, down from 5.55 last week, but still higher than a year ago, 5.41. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This is something I'm very excited about personally because as a communicator, we're always trying to sell positive narratives that will make people kind of a call to action to inspire them to act in a way that benefits our organization.
Kara Bishop is with Plains Cotton Growers.
I've always struggled a little bit with that with cotton because there are so many things we have to defend, right? We have to defend our practices. We have to defend our, you know, pesticide use, herbicide use, things like that. We're very responsible and farmers are very good at what they do, but trying to explain that to the general public can sometimes be kind of a beating and you're always on the defense. But with microplastics, we have an opportunity to be on the offense. And it's really exciting to see that we have a solution to a global problem. Microplastics is increasing in its intensity of an issue. And so it's exciting to know that we have a solution for that. Our natural fiber is a healthy alternative to plastic pollution, which is harming our environment, but it's also harming human health. And so you have two emotional anchors. And I'm nerding out here, I'm sorry, on the communication aspect, but you have two emotional anchors that can help you grab consumer attention, regardless of whether they're in production agriculture or not. And that's important to me because I'm always trying to find ways to connect to external stakeholders who don't even realize that they are stakeholders of Plains Cotton Growers, right? Try to get out of the agricultural echo chamber and into everyday people's lives. And so this microplastics issue is a way to do that. And what's exciting about what the National Cotton Council has done last month, they launched a Plant Not Plastic campaign. I've been taking some of this research that Cotton Incorporated has done, and I've been telling it to everybody that will listen to me, but I don't quite have the power of reach that something like the National Cotton Council is going to have. So it's nice to see this huge campaign being launched to really get public attention to it. And so plantnotplastic.org is the website. I would highly encourage anyone to visit it. It has some great information on it, fact sheets, videos, things that kind of show you that what you wear matters. And I've talked about these facts when I give presentations that, you know, we know that we dump 14 million metric tons of plastic into the ocean each year. And we also know that 35% of all that plastic in the ocean is from washing synthetic clothes. So when you wash clothes made out of acrylic or polyester or nylon, that is entering our waterways in a way that is affecting health on two different scales, on an environmental scale and a human scale.
So where does someone find this information?
I had a hard time finding all this stuff in the same place, so I made my own webpage. So if you go to plainscotton.org, you can find all that research, all the research from Cotton Incorporated and research from other scientists. It's under my resources tab on the plainscotton.org website. And I also provide a list of cotton-friendly brands and stores with links where you can directly go to buy cotton products. It's not good enough just to highlight the issue. We need to be able to really solve the problem by making content easy to consume and easy to find. I do not know how many people have told me they can't find cotton. On this website, you can find it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For soybeans, the changes in the supply-demand balance sheet, by the time you look at what small changes came out 2024 and bring those forward, we were at 300 million bushels of ending stocks. Now, by my own figures, if the usage doesn't change, we're down below 290. The trade was expecting about 299 million bushels, about unchanged. So that's where I would slightly differ from the trade in terms of where things could go.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
I have looked at the outcomes of having yields different than the USDA's current high numbers. And when you look at the corn market and see what that balance sheet would look like, corn supply demand balance sheet, with not this record high figure that we've got plugged in of 186.7 bushels an acre, but if you're only down to 184, and I'd say there's about a 40% chance we'll actually hit the 186, 187 bushels an acre figure, and more like 184, 185 thereabouts. So 60% chance that we're lower than that. And you end up dropping the ending stocks figure from 2.3 billion down to 2.1, 2.2. The corn price moves up marginally in a little bit tighter situation, up about look at 22 to 30 some cents higher. If we have lower yields, all else being held equal, you'd have some impact on the corn market to the positive side. Even on beans, again, we're projecting a 53.5 bushels per acre, record high. And with that, at least by my calculations, about 286 million bushels. If you end up and have 52 bushels an acre, which is still a sharply pretty high yield, and run that through the numbers, instead of you tighten up ending stocks by about 50 million bushels. Instead of $10 a bushel, you're dropping stocks to use from 6.6 as a percent down to 5.5, and about somewhere around 11 and a quarter per bushel U.S. average price. So right now, in the midst of harvest pressures, it's hard to conceive of anything positive right now in these grain markets. But there's still a lot of uncertainty in it that's out there to be dealt with on the supply demand side. So I guess our best job now is to go get the crop out of the field, and hopefully it's lots of bushels, and then see around the country where these larger production numbers come in at. It's anticipated they might be a bit high yet, probably move lower, and then shift our attention from. Well, now we'll be focusing on supplies all the way through November, really having the potential for a lot of volatility at that time in the markets, and we finally get these USDA numbers in, especially if the production yields are a little bit short, and then see what'll happen in prices. And I think that if we do start to move, if we have some surprise to market, start to move higher, 10, 20, 30 cents, because of any changes there, I think that'll be met with probably very aggressive selling, as people will have languished through a pretty low set of corn and soybean prices until that time, and any strength probably be met with very aggressive selling. What's left over after that, in terms of any remaining supplies, will look hard at storage function, storage game, some might say, and just see where we might be at. I have heard a good amount of discussion from people of perhaps moving grain, corn, soybeans, sorghum, then re-ownership in some way in the futures market, particularly buying call options. So I think all that will be in heavy discussion until that time.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, not everything has been taken care of.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson, on the farm bill.
Probably the higher priorities that of American farmers that and farm families have been achieved. But there's still about 20% that needs to be done. And so this is, you know, as what we've done already. I affectionately refer to that as Farm Bill 1.0. We have Farm Bill 2.0. I've been working with my ranking member from Minnesota. We've been working and talking and getting ready, hopefully, in September. Now, what is left is about 20% of the Farm Bill. There's a lot of policy. Most of that policy is not controversial. It's very bipartisan. And it comes at a price tag that is relatively affordable, actually. I never thought in my life I'd ever say that something that costs under $8 billion is not a lot of money. But in the scheme of things, it's and we will pay for the remaining part, just like we paid for the first part. And so I'm excited. We're going to get farm. We're working hard to get. We will be working hard. We are actually every day now working on Farm Bill 2.0. And I'm hoping out of our committee anyways that we do that by the end of September. I mean, we are working with in a bipartisan way, and I am working with my counterpart, Senator John Bozeman, in the Senate.
More than likely, it will require bipartisanship. Ranking Member, House Ag Committee, Angie Craig from Minnesota.
Well, we are in the process of sitting down with the majority, even in a government shutdown. I'm in D.C. right now, even with no votes, because my team and I are continuing to meet with one another and my team with the majority to talk through a skinny farm bill, what Democratic priorities might look like, what a true bipartisan bill might look like. But a lot of the funding was taken care of in reconciliation for the crop insurance program, for reference prices. The problem is none of those payments are going to go out until October of next year. And that is just too long, given how much pain there is in farm country. If we had been doing this as a 5-year, 12 title farm bill, we could have been creative and maybe come up with a new policy or mid-year payments or something like that. But there are still some farm bill items that are unaddressed. The orphan programs, in particular, rural development, farm credit. There are a number of programs that are not addressed. And so Democrats are at the table with our Republican colleagues. And we do hope that we can come to a bipartisan farm bill.
But what happens if a new farm bill or an extension of the existing farm bill doesn't happen before the first of the year?
We certainly know that anything that has to be funded in the skinny farm bill also has to have an offset in the farm bill. And so that could be a stumbling block for us. And then, I know before we came on, we were talking about just, you know, we have these old laws on the books from the 1930s and the 1940s that would kick in permanent law if we don't get something done before midnight on December 31st of this year. And so we know that that would require USDA to start buying up commodities and dairy products. And that would create absolute havoc in a number of commodity sectors, but especially in dairy.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
If this was a time when we had very, very short crops, really, really tight supplies, it would be a much more volatile time than we're in seemingly this year, where crops look pretty good. It may vary some around what final yields of production are. And really, we're just quibbling about how high the record yields will be for corn and for soybeans and some of these crops.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien on effects of the government shutdown and lack of USDA reports.
I guess in bringing all that together, probably the best information we've got right now would be what the trade anticipates as they pull together what independent information they have. What was expected for the report yesterday out of the average trade estimates were that the U.S. corn yield would drop from that September figure, September 12th. Report number of 186.7 bushels per acre for corn down to 185. So that would have impacted things that, unless the USDA changed acres as they had in that September report, that would have dropped U.S. corn production from 16.8 billion bushels down to 16.65, about 16.645. So about, 150 million bushels. That would have had some impact on the supply demand balance sheet. We'll see how that goes. On soybeans, the average yield drop would have, was projected or thought to drop from 53.5 bushels per acre down to 53.2, a moderate drop. And I would say there's still a fair amount of uncertainty with regard to where these yields are. It does not go unnoticed that in the eastern and central corn belt that we've had dry conditions for a while. It worries about that aren't showing up in the market with regard to soybeans, which mature later, really at all. We haven't seen the markets cash-wise make any strong moves to the high side. We're just holding in pretty steady till we get more information. And if that slight yield decrease occurred for wheat, we would have gone from about 4.3 billion bushels down to 4.27. So, again, about 30 million bushels, not a big thing. So we'll see. The impact is raised for that November report because of what we have here. And expectations for ending stocks were the other major focus that these markets have for corn. We did see an expectation of 2.23 billion bushels of stocks being worked out. And a lot of that has to do with issues that came out of that grain stocks report. Basically, the USDA went back in and had increased the size of the 2025 crop by their estimate by about 25 million bushels, had dropped the feed usage number or the residual usage number, which includes feed by 180 million bushels, and ending stocks for the last marketing year about 1.532, I believe, billion bushels. And that was up about, again, 150 million bushels from what it was before. So bring all that together, especially the new crop beginning stocks figure up to 1.5 billion. And it put us in the mode of looking at ending stocks sharply over 2 billion bushels. We were already in September anticipating that. Now we're at 2.223 billion bushels. If we have any rationing of usage at all, then you're moving instead of 2.2, 2.3, 2.4. And as far as anybody looking for a seller's market in the corn, I think we're on the other side of that fence. It's a buyer's market. We're well over 2 billion bushels with regard to the anticipated production we have running through the supply-demand balance sheet, and you just have what you have.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
No one disputes there's a use case internationally for real-time training. Stable token, doesn't matter how that function is. There's an international use case. There's a Wall Street use case.
At a recent community bankers event hosted by the Federal Reserve, questions for Vlad Tenev, CEO of Robinhood.
Come to Wyoming and think about my bank in Wyoming. $570 million bank. I bank lots of businesses. Is there a use case for domestic, regular business trade from the people on Main Street? I mean, really, that's what I think every banker in this room wants to ask that doesn't operate on a Wall Street model. We don't trade. We don't mess in the commodities market. Do you see use case for what we do every day?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to answer it a little differently. He probably has a smart answer. So disregard mine by 50%.
Well, no, you should answer because I also wanted to hear your thoughts on stablecoin.
We often don't see the use case, but we want to be ready when it presents itself. And that's, I think, sometimes the hardest leap. And I'm very proud of our board that they're entrepreneurial and they're willing to spend some money to prepare for an ultimate outcome that may or may not happen, right? And that takes capital and that takes earnings. But we always need to be thinking about what could come versus what is here today or looking worse backwards. Because if we're building for what was 5 years ago and it's proven out, it's too late. He's already moved. So I would just challenge you to keep that innovative spirit, the entrepreneurial spirit. Keep your options open. Start researching. Start investigating. Learn is step one, my humble opinion.
Yeah, my take is honestly, from your position, you probably have more compelling opportunities. I think there's a lot of misinformation and hype out there. For example, a lot of people are saying, okay, this is going to be the new way people pay for stuff. I think in the U.S., it's going to be very, very hard to compete with the credit cards. I mean, we have a great credit card offering 3% cash back on all of your spend. It's hard to do that with a stable coin. And I don't think a lot of people are even, a lot of companies are seriously trying to disrupt that piece. Interest, even if we figure out how to pay interest in stable coins, that doesn't mean that suddenly consumers are going to rush to keep their money in stable coin form. You don't have the FDIC insurance protection, but it's also not a dramatically better product. You know, the interest isn't going to be higher. It's because under the hood, the assets are going to be kept in treasury bills or in some kind of bank account anyway. So, I would probably not be overly terrified and looking for consumer use cases where there are none and where you're not seeing demand. And I think there will be time. I don't think there's like a land rush opportunity in most markets. And we offer support for stable coins on our platform. You know, we have USDC as well as a big collection. Right now, it's pretty niche. I mean, most people are still moving money in through ACH, even though it's a little bit slower and perhaps not 24/7. But we can get very, very close to the ideal experience using traditional rails.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.